Welcome to the Traveling Teams Media Ministry. To find out more, visit www.thetravelingteam.org.
I'd like it to be a conversation because what we're talking about is really, hopefully, about real life stuff. And so we'll be conversational. For those of you on tape, that was me drinking water. When I was in fifth grade, I had to memorize something called the preamble to the Constitution. Anybody? I see that hand, brother. How many here? At some point, it didn't have to be fifth grade, but here, out here in California, I grew up in Southern California, it was fifth grade. We had to memorize the, you know, in order to form a perfect union thing, and something about health, wealth, and success, something. Kind of cloudy on the details now because it's been whatever. How old are you in fifth grade? 10, 11, so it's been 35 years or so. For me, I get the privilege of teaching a bunch of mostly kind of into college or early graduate school folks at my home church at Lake. I just do that for fun. They pay me to be the missions guy, but I do that for fun on Sundays. And oftentimes people say, Scott, thanks for teaching, but I don't have any idea what you said, but the pre-ramble was pretty good. So the Constitution has a preamble. That means a well-thought-out conversation introduction. Scott tends to be more about pre-ramble. Not so well thought out, not necessarily related to the topic that I was supposed to be talking about, but I had a pre-ramble moment this evening, and I don't want it to suck the energy out of the room, but I think it'll really tie into a lot of what I hope we're going to talk about tonight in some way or another. I got a call just an hour ago. 3 months ago, I was in Phnom Penh, Cambodia for some meetings. And with a very large mission agency there doing some very cool things our church is involved with. And met with two other churches, one from the south, one from the east coast. And we're in a partnership there with this agency doing some stuff. We were there for a week of kind of leadership meetings, plotting some future course and stuff like that. Well, the facilitator from these meetings is a guy from my church, from Lake Avenue Church. And he's a business consultant by day and a missions, you know, hero by night. And so he was facilitating our meetings and so forth and so on. Well, while we were there, he got this amazing news that he and his wife were expecting triplets. Now, for me, that's like run away and don't come back. And they had never had children. So in speaking as one with two boys, triplets all at the same time, it's like logarithmic. It's not like 1 + 1 + 1. I was an English major, not a math guy, so I'm really not understanding the whole exponential growth thing, but let me tell you, that's what happens if you have more than one child at the same time. It's not 1 + 1 + 1. And an hour ago, I got news that they lost all three of their children, so about 4 months into the pregnancy. And I was reminded that the unexpected is part of life. It's just part of the deal. And as you guys are wrapping up what I hope for some of you has been an absolutely life-changing summer, your expectations, it's good to have them. But stuff's just going to change because there's a lot of stuff we don't get to control. We can have great intentions. We can have great plans. We can be smarter than everybody else in the room and better looking. And that's not enough. Because you don't get to control all the outcomes. Right now, because of what I know about the IT Project what you guys are doing out here and have been doing out here, some of you guys are coming out of this just excited as all get out to go back to your campus or your home church, campus fellowship, whatever, you know, subgroup you relate to, or some of you have bigger ideas, a network of churches or a network of campus groups. And say, you know what, I am just so pumped. I'm going to go and I'm going to take this amazing story that Scripture is far deeper than I ever knew before. God is about things that I never understood. And my church is going to be changed forever. And you've got this great plan that's already been evolving, or your campus fellowship. Jesus had some things to say about that in his Sermon on the Mount, where he said, you know, let's not worry too much about tomorrow. Today has enough trouble of its own. It's one of my favorite Jesus sayings. It just sounds so unspiritual. It sounds like he wasn't having a very good day that day. James says, Jesus' brother. I guess it's good to be Jesus' brother. He must have heard a lot of cool stuff. But it would have been also interesting watching them fight over like the dreidel or something in their house at Hanukkah time. Because I expect Jesus always won. James says in his letter to the church, he said, you know what, you can plan to go here and be about this business, and you're going to do this, and you're going to sell that, but really, who controls your future? It's not you. Walk humbly. Hold on loosely. Scott's retranslation of James in chapter 2. And I offer that up just because as my friend and his wife and their family grieve this evening, and will be for days because they've been trying for a very long time to have kids, they had a lot of plans. They had a lot of things figured out. It's just not our call all the time. It's just not our call. And when it comes right down to it, are we about the thing? Or are we about the author of life? And if we're going to be about the thing and the outcomes and the activities, then we are doing a disservice to the one who is the author of our life. And a lot of you guys are really excited about some stuff you have learned about the author of our life and the author of history. Do not lose sight of the fact it's the author of history that we're excited about. The fact that he chooses to have a relationship with us, unbelievable. The fact somehow we had ears to hear and a heart to respond to him, unstinking believable. Because how many people don't have ears to hear, much less how many can't hear because they have no access to the voice? And the fact is somehow, somewhere in my journey, my heart responded. Your heart responded. That is amazing. Don't ever lose track of that. In the midst of all the good things you want to do, the great things you want to do, the world you want to change and that I want to change, do not lose track of the fact that it's the one who calls us out, who loves us more deeply than we'll ever understand this side of eternity, is the place to get lost. Not in the mission, but in the one who gave the mission. So with that kind of downer, I'm concluded with my pre-ramble. But God was speaking to me even this evening as I was doing some other things, trying to concentrate on some other things, and he just kept interrupting, saying, don't forget, Scott, it's still about me. It was yesterday, and it will be again tomorrow. It's not about you today. It won't be about you tomorrow. It's about me. Okay, let me pray, because we got to figure some way to get the energy I just sucked out of the room back in the room. So I'm going to ask you to do something else. You know what? One of the most frustrating things in the world is to watch the news and not be able to do anything about it. So I'm going to ask you, if you'd be so kind, to turn around to someone next to you and pray for Nicole and Leon. Okay? Just do that real quickly. 2 minutes. And then I'm going to start praying over the top of all this din. Okay? And I'll pull this back together. But if you would just pray grace onto them in the midst of this challenging time. Thanks. Go. Somebody pray. Father God, we do not know what the future holds, but we are confident in the one who holds the future. Thanks for holding our future. And thanks that somehow, by grace, we've recognized that it is you who holds it. Thanks for relationship with you. Do what you want with our lives. They're yours. Amen. Thanks, you guys, for joining some folks you probably will never meet or know in part of their journey. Because a lot of what you've been experiencing even this summer, I mean, you guys came from all these different places and stuff. It's about a journey together with those you know and don't and meet along the way. So maybe in some ways it's really appropriate to even spend a little time in prayer journeying with someone you'll probably never meet. That's the cool thing about the body of Christ. A little bit of my story. It's not real textbook. I didn't grow up a missionary kid. I didn't grow up in a missions-oriented church, at least not originally. Did I forget the part where I went to seminary? No, that's right, I didn't go to seminary. Nothing in my journey till the age of 27 or 28 said missions in any way, other than if you grew up in Southern California, you tour the missions of California, these, you know, buildings that were built 200 years ago by the Spanish. That was missions to me. San Gabriel Mission, San Fernando Mission, San Francisco Mission, San Diego Mission. That was mission to me. I graduated. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't do that either. Okay, well, I went to UCLA. I grew up here in Southern California. I was born in Pennsylvania, and we moved out here 2 years when I was 2 years old. I told my parents I was tired of snow, and so they moved me out here. And so I went to school. I literally played on this campus as a kid, would ride my bike over here from a neighborhood just a couple minutes this direction, which is kind of freaky. You know, Americans move all over the place. I can't seem to. I've tried, and I just can't seem to get away. End up going to college, as I said, locally at UCLA. During my time at UCLA, I built a business, put myself through school. I didn't have any other means to get through school, so I was working my way through school. In the midst of my senior year, I was married by that point, and my wife, in this brilliant, prescient moment, says, "Scott, why don't you just build your business? Because you're only going to school like one day a week now anyway, because it's kind of getting a little out of control here. What if you just decided for the next year to try and build your business and see what happened? And then you can go back and get your English literature degree, because anybody here in English or an American language? Yeah. Unemployment is your future. Embrace it. Or yeah, or grad school, exactly. So whether it be a mission school or other, it will be grad school. So I actually, she spoke truth, so I decided to temporarily interrupt my education. That was in 1982. I think my parents are on to me. I think they figured out it might not be as temporary as I implied 23 years ago. So that's what I did. I ended up building my business. And then it was in the mid-80s, through some relationships with some friends, one of them, the last name Richardson. Some of you might have read Peace Church. Did Don Richardson teach at the intensive? No, okay. He doesn't live in the area anymore, so it's less likely. But some of you might have read or seen the movie Peace Child, familiar with the Richardson story. You certainly read it during Perspectives, because I know you read every single word of the text. That you would have read some articles by Don. Well, one of his eldest sons, Steve, and I were really close friends. They were here at Lake Avenue Church, as Justin alluded to. A number of the folks that you would know now, at least by name, call Lake Avenue home, including Ralph Winter. Nothing more intimidating than to stand up on our platform, pretend I have something to say about missions, and the first person I actually lock eyes with is Ralph Winter, who's forgotten more about mission than I know. through relationship with Steve and a couple other folks, who the weird thing was, they were choosing cross-cultural ministry for their life. That's not weird. What's weird is they were cool people. They weren't dysfunctional. They didn't wear too much polyester. I mean, that's what really threw me off, because I thought missionaries were kind of these folks who didn't fit. And It was them who drew me into this thing that God's been doing throughout history of making his name great among all the peoples. Kind of like, surreptitiously, this way, a little bit this way, a little bit that way, through relationship with three different couples, but intensely two of the guys in of these three, I was really drawn in. I've been doing a lot of discipleship stuff for a long time, been on the college staff of my church as a volunteer for a bunch of years, and started Young Marrieds class and kind of had a pastoral role in that and been doing a lot of stuff. And missions was just like, it was like prayer. It was like giving. It was just, it was a discipline. You did it. It's part of the kingdom thing. I'm a Christian. I signed on. Okay, missions is part of the deal. It's not what I'm doing, but it's good for you. It's okay with me. And I'll help support it. But through relationship with these guys, I got seduced. That this was more than a discipline. This was actually at the heart of what God was about, was making his name known to all peoples. And I came to a place a few years later in the late 80s, maybe 88 or so, where a verse that probably most of us know really well, and those of us who grew up in the Christian faith teethed on it, John 14:6, which says, okay, very good. Again, for those of you on recording, it was I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Can I change that a little bit? I want to change the article. See, I'm going to show off. I was an English major here. I'm going to change the article the to the. Now, would you say it with me? Insert the for the. I am that's fine. We don't need the second part. Bonus points for you who got this, the rest of it. Do you see how the weight shifts there from I am the way to I am the way? It seems kind of subtle until you actually say it a few times. Because I believe that is the truth. So if Christ is really the singular way, the singular truth, the singular life, let me take you to an implication. If you don't have access to the way, the truth, and the life, where are you? You're outside in the quad looking in on a hot, sweaty Southern California evening into a nice, cool, air-conditioned room and have no idea how to operate the door. That really changed me. And a lot of folks do discipleship, and a lot do well, and I really love it. I love people, life skill, coaching kind of stuff. I love that. That's what I'm really actually hardwired for. I love coaching. I've been an athlete all my life, although some of my teammates might contradict that statement. And I've loved coaching. But God began to move me from coaching kind of whole life discipleship to a missional discipleship for God's purposes amongst the peoples. Because I was captured with the logic of, wow, if they can't know the way, the truth, the life, what does that mean to me? And with that, my journey took a sharp left turn. And I moved away from just discipleship to really missions-oriented discipleship. And God kept opening doors. And I'm going to fast forward the story a lot now. Although you'd love the slides if I brought them. In the 90s, I became deeply involved with the Perspectives movement. I came eventually to chair the board for a number of years. Began getting invitations to do many other things in the area of missions and missions development and develop some mobilization tools and groups and stuff. And it wasn't because I was smarter. Just because God had captured my heart to take a lot of the discipleship tools that a lot of us have learned, IV, Crusade, Chi Alpha, whatever, stuff we know and have learned in our churches have downloaded into us and just moved that into, what if you could take some of that stuff and help people see God's bigger picture, begin to see Scripture as one story, not 66 stories. And which eventually led to some offers to do other things, and one of them was my home church, Lake Avenue Church. Asked me to join the staff in a mobilization role. And I had been downsizing my company through the 90s because God kept giving me more ministry opportunities. But he had put my company in a pretty nice little niche. So I didn't have to work a lot in order to keep food on the table for my family. And so we just made a choice of trading time off for cash so that I could do what God was seemed to be challenging me to. And then the church comes along and says, will you join us? And I said, no, that's not my idea of a good time working for a church, much less my church. And I love it. Great folks, great place, but church is a complicated beast. And and our missions pastor at the time said, so what if we just said your job description is yours? You continue to do all this mobilization stuff you're doing. Oh, now I got to pray about it. Rats. So I pray about it and say yes, and fast forward the story a little bit. It was a couple years after that our missions pastor changed roles and moved over to being pastor evangelism. And our team came and asked me, and I said, no, didn't you hear the story last time? Don't want to be on the inside of the church, especially don't want to be on the pastoral team. By the way, I haven't been to seminary. That's not going to work at a church like Lake, very Orthodox church. And then my missions pastor says, and good friend says, well, yeah, he's still a good friend. He says, Scott, don't you think you ought to pray about it? And I'm like, oh. Would you let go of the pray about it, okay? That's what I tell other people. You don't get to tell me that. So I prayed about it and the Abrahamic challenge about, you know, if there is a far distant country, are you willing to go take a look at it? And in my heart, I am. And I was. And I said, okay, because this is great. Because I knew there's no way anything would come of it because I hadn't been to seminary. Because I, well, frankly, I dropped out of college. My parents were on to me by this point in the year 2000. So it was just not going to work at a church like Lake Avenue. And we did a big national, international search, and I really began to sweat when I got a second interview. That concerned me. It really scared me when I got a third interview. At that point, God had begun to put in motion some really strange things that were pretty radical for our life. And that's how I ended up in full-time missions ministry. When you ask who you are, I describe myself as a mobilization guy because I've not been a long-term field worker, nor am I a traditional academic, but I am very academic, just non-traditional. And I've been to a lot of places on the globe, spent a lot of time speaking with a lot of long-term workers, a lot of our brothers and sisters in the emerging church, underground churches in many number of places around the world, as well as the obvious overground church. So there's a lot of experience there, but it's just not typical. And how like our creative God to want to do something unique with our lives, not like everybody else's. So anybody who tells you you have to look like this and you have to do this, would you please just start rejecting that now? Because that's not the way God operates. His question is always, are we willing? After that, it's up to him to fill in the blanks. And I don't know how long this chapter in my life goes on. It's a challenging one, and I don't know how long it goes on, but I hope I'm not there a day longer than he intends. I hope I have the courage not to be there a day less than he intends. It's about obedience, and keep it simple, stupid. It was George Patterson who you might have had. You did have George Patterson. Didn't he come down to teach? I thought I heard he was coming down to do this. Well, that's too bad. But you read some of his stuff. And he's one of those that influenced me to keep it simple, stupid. Don't overthink your faith. So that's enough of me and background and story. I hope it's a little helpful. I tell it not because, you know, I'm that interested myself. I hope it's because it's just a story that God uses different people in different wacky ways. Are you willing? Here's my question for you. I want somebody in a minute to tell me. That's all you get is 1 minute. I want you to tell me about your summer experience here. And somebody be brave. I'm going to take a couple, at least two or three stories, but somebody needs to get this party started. Oh, this is killing Justin. Come on now. Do not leave him hanging like this. Don't make me call on somebody. I will.
Wait them out. They'll crack.
I think it's been a unique summer. What's your name?
I'm Tyler.
Hey, Tyler. I'm Scott. That's my oldest son's name, Tyler. So, yeah. Good call.
So just the summer, it's been a really unique time for God to use, I think, because we're in the context of, like, 30 other people that we've never met for the most part, but yet get really close to, you know, the same kind of passions, same heart, hopefully, and that's been really amazing. Just being able to process it together, being able to learn about what God is doing in the world and the fact that it isn't contained to now, it's throughout all history, and that it's unified and directed. So that's been really sort of inspiring but challenging too. The fact that we've been able to work through it together has been really cool. Trying to process it as a group. So.
Oh, nice recovery on the leader thing. 55 seconds. Well done. Somebody else, tell me your story in 1 minute. Your summer. I'm sitting down, so if you want to sit down, that's cool. But you do have to tell me who you are at least.
Just speak up too.
Oh, actually, you know what? I'm gonna thank you. I forgot about that.
No, I don't have a good voice, dude. This isn't it.
All right. Well, I'm Chris Scott. See, I told you.
Here. The biggest thing coming this summer was, I guess, the thought that I had systematized my entire theological system, and I thought I had every little single thing figured out. And some of the people here think it's pretty funny because they know I still think that. So anyway, so it was really good just to have some things knocked down, you know, and just really look at it in light of just the way I was approaching a Bible, not as a proof text, you know, but as a complete story and as a revelation. So it's definitely been an interesting experience. And the best thing is being around people who are from all different walks of even from intellectual and social and just all these different growths, having the same passion and same desire, and it's been quite incredible.
Thanks.
One more.
I'm good. I don't actually have to pick on anybody that way.
I'm Courtney.
Hey, Courtney.
Hey, good to meet you. For me, this summer has been an absolute freight train of theology and emotion that has, like Chris said, knocked my feet out from under me. I think for all of us, it's just lamb-blasted our methods and the way that we thought God operated and the way we thought we operated in this world. But more than that, to say that this summer was just a load of knowledge and new revelation would profit us nothing. To add to that, and most importantly, it's been absolute gross encounter with God, where I think He has gotten in our faces, messed with each of us individually, and that's been the sweetest part.
Thanks, Courtney.
Wow.
55. 45 seconds. Not that wasn't a score. A little left-hand turn. I had an intern from Fuller Seminary this year, which is again really kind of funny that I had an intern from a seminary, and one of the leaders, I guess, of the internship program calls me up and says, "Scott, can you tell me a little bit about your systematic theology? You'll like this, Chris." And actually, you won't like this at all. And I said, "Well, if I had a picture phone, I could hold it up and I could turn around. And you could see my really nice book right behind me here on my shelf that says systematic theology." I said, "And so I can talk about systematic theology. It's not a problem." I said, and I took a deep breath, realizing that at this point I was potentially going to completely torpedo this internship, which I was really excited about this particular candidate in particular. And I took a deep breath and I said, "However, my theology is desystematic. I find it just theologically offensive on God's behalf, as if He needs me to defend Him, that somehow we have figured Him out. Most of the cults and sects have God figured out, which is why it's great to have Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses on my doorstep, because I appreciate they figured them out, and I let them explain that to me." And then I say, "Well, that must be really depressing to totally understand God, because now the difference between you and God is what? Sorry, I'm not interested in your God. He's too small." So thankfully, the person at the other end of the phone took a deep breath and returned and said, "I can live with that." Indeed, our God, I think, refuses to be systematized as we might want to do. But that's an extra. That's not what we came to talk about. Here's a question for you. I just heard three stories of your summer vacation, what I did on my summer vacation. Why should I care? Why should I care? I want you now to picture your dorm flat, your campus group, your home church, whatever comes to mind that you relate to. Because someone in that kind of close group is going to ask you, "So, what did you do this summer, Tom, Teresa? Tell me about your summer." Now, I now want you to flash back to somebody you know who's been on a summer short-term mission. Now, I know that could be you, but I want you to think the first person you ever encountered that went overseas, okay? I'm sorry, that's kind of a false thing, the whole you got to go overseas. We all get that. But that's what I want you to think about. The first person you met that went overseas and came back, and you said, so, tell me about your summer. How long did you want to listen to them? 1 minute, Courtney offers up. I'm going to propose to you maybe 3 minutes. How many of you have been overseas on a short-term trip? I need some pretty significant cross-culture. This doesn't mean you're better than anybody else in the room, okay? How many have ever been to either Asia or Africa on that trip? Okay, good. I'm glad it's a sizable group. For those of you who went to Asia, did you ever get the question, did you ride an elephant? Show of hands. Thank you. For those of you who went to Africa, did you get the question, did you see a lion? Show of hands. How did that make you feel about your short-term mission experience? Either one of you guys, just jump in real quick. Did you think about it at all?
A whole lot, to be honest.
Well, good. It's not what I really wanted to talk about was the comment. But can I just tell you, when you go back to your churches, people are going to want to know if you rode an elephant. What'd you do this summer? Did you ride the elephant? But you went to Southern California. Did you go to Disneyland? Or how about Universal Studios, right? You did that. I mean, you can say you went to Malibu now, so that's good for something. Because there's going to be a significant portion that you're going to get 2 or 3 minutes with, and at the end of 3 minutes, they're turning off. Wow, I learned this amazing thing. We took this ridiculous course with way too much reading for summer called Perspectives in the World Christian Movement, and we had these different, every day we had these people just like opening a fire hose on us, telling us these amazing stories from their own personal experience, and then we'd read these things, and you got to read this book. I got to show you this book I read. This is amazing. And look at some of these notes I wrote in my journal, and let me try and tell you what God's purposes are throughout all time to all people. But I just ask, did you ride an elephant? Did you eat any weird food? Because I've heard a lot about Californians. Are they all flaky? Did you see a celebrity while you were there? Did you see him shooting a movie? And you're going to go after the 15th time someone says that to you. You're going to begin to think, well, what did I do out there? And why don't these people care? That's the rub of mobilization. Because we think we've got a story to tell that's going to revolutionize and rock their world. And they want to talk about the elephant ride. Why? Because the elephant's pretty safe. I know what one looks like. It's kind of cool. Looks kind of neat. But everything else associated with your summer is pretty messy and really hard for me to process. So I want to encourage each of you, just as I do with my friends, if you can't describe why you're a follower of Jesus in 2 minutes, then I think you have a problem. Sorry, we just met. That's really rude of me. No, I mean it. I do. I think it's a problem. Short attention span theater is the nature of the society we live in. So if you can't tell people why in 2 minutes and intrigue them in 2 minutes why you're a Jesus follower, then you need to just work on that. If you can't intrigue somebody in 1 minute what you did with your summer, you need to work on that. Because people, what you want is you want someone to go, huh? You did what? For your 45 or whatever it is, 60 days in Southern California? You went where? I could tell you about all we did, but let me just tell you. I wish I had time to tell you about this golden idol we saw get like a milk bath. You know, I've heard of like celebrity spas and stuff, but that was, woo! Because you know what? You're going to go on and tell me something else. I'm locking on to the milk bath that you saw in a spa with a celebrity. I'm going to ask you about that. It's not about what you're going to tell me. It's what I'm going to ask you and then what you're going to tell me. It's not about the opener of the story. It's, can you get me to ask you a question? And it needs to be a question that I want to ask, which is what I'm about to do. I'm about to turn it back over to you because I don't want to start. I don't want to keep talking about stuff and answering questions you aren't asking. The best thing you can do in the area of mobilization is not to answer questions people aren't asking. Sometimes I sit in the pew on Sunday morning or Saturday night or, you know, whatever night of worship you call your worship night in your local church. I go other places because my pastor's answering questions that I'm not asking. I'm not proud of that, but that's what happens. God, grow me in my discipline to be able to track with what you're saying a little more deeply. But that's the truth. Friends, don't answer questions people aren't asking. That's the first rule. In me, that's the first rule of mobilization. There's this thing called reentry. That's the process that folks go through that live one place and come back to what they believe to be their home, and then they find out that their home has changed. While you've been away from campus, while you've been away from your home, while you've been away from your church, life has gone on. 24/7, stuff happens. Some of which you've been privy to, some of which you haven't. But meanwhile, as Courtney said, her mind's kind of been blown about some stuff. So even while, pardon the term, real normal life is going on 24/7, for some of you guys here, it's been more like going on 48/14. Because you've been running at a much higher disc rate than you would have if you weren't here. You cannot expect everybody to be running at your rate. And so when you show up and go home, and you have all this stuff you want to communicate, and life seems to be kind of the same, and you're so changed, and why don't they get it? You just need to know before you land, that's kind of going to be the deal, okay? So now the question becomes, what do I do about it? Missiology 101 is not about me standing in here in the air conditioning and looking at the guy in the patio who's all hot and sweaty and saying, man, it sucks to be him. I'm glad I'm me. Why doesn't he just walk in through the door? It's about me going over the door and finding out if he wants to be in the patio and maybe just hang out in the patio with him. Or maybe he wants to be in the air-conditioned room and I'll offer him the chance to join me in here and join all of us. But it's about going to where he is or she is. Same thing when you guys go home. And mobilization at its root is, do you know your audience? Just think about the missionary stories you've heard this summer. It's all about, do you understand your audience? What makes them tick? What makes their heart bleed? What makes them cry? If I understand what makes you tick, I can probably have a conversation with you. I might not quite speak the same language as you. Generationally, we're not going to quite speak the same language. But the more I listen, the better chance I have. And then I can tell you stuff that relate to you that I've experienced in my walk with God over the last 60 days that hopefully you're going to care about, as opposed to all that other 90% of which you aren't going to give a rip about, unless maybe we can start the conversation and get a little ways down the road. What's on your mind when it comes to this summer and thinking about communicating the big messages you've heard or some of the experiences you've had? Mobilization just means basically, Scott's non-Webster's dictionary definition, is how does resource meet need? That to me is mobilization. We got something to give away. There's somebody out there who needs it. How do we give it to them? Sorry, it's not very sophisticated. There it is. What's on your mind when it comes to how do you talk about this stuff? I convinced you you can't talk about it so successfully that I've scared you away from the subject.
I think just that, knowing that a lot of people like don't want to listen, or maybe they'll listen for 1 minute, and how do you... Does that make the most of that 1 minute opportunity to talk to them?
Was that a question or an observation?
What was on my mind?
Yeah, if that's true. And friends, you know the only reason I'm a specialist is because my name says I'm the director of international outreach at my church. Therefore, I'm a specialist, right? Please don't let position ever fool you. Let common sense be your guide. It's usually pretty reliable. If you listen critically to the Holy Spirit. And for some people, they're going to have a five-minute tolerance. But if you assume 5 minutes and they have 1 minute tolerance, you are in trouble. Because the fact is, and boy, it hurts. You know, when I come home and I've been someplace with our brothers and sisters somewhere in the world who every day of faith costs them something. It's not a casual bit of math they do. They've done some very complex calculus because it costs them something every day. I'm not putting them on a pedestal. They have been saved by the same blood that saved you and me. But when I come back from a place like that, let me give you an example. I had a young woman who was the age of 19 a year ago. I heard her story in Phnom Penh. And she's in a discipleship training school to be basically the cell church pastor of her village. 100% Buddhist, except for she and her sister. Historically, no sign of Christ anywhere in the anywhere in their village ever, as far as anyone knows. And she'd been stoned twice, 19. Stoned twice and had a pronouncement from the village shaman that the demon who rules the village had come to him in a trance and said that there's a new demon in the village. His name is Jesus. He needs to leave. The shaman came to this young woman and said, the new demon Jesus needs to leave. And she and you need to leave with him, or she needs to leave. She said, well, I can't leave. This is my village, my grandparents, et cetera, et cetera. He said, well, the demon also told me you'd say that. If you won't take him, then the demon's going to go negotiate a price. And that price is two of your brothers and sisters. And I don't know where your theology is on this. I'm not sure where mine is on this. But the next day, two of her siblings were dead. She'd gone to bed with them. They were completely healthy. They did not wake up the next day. Please don't get lost in my systematic theology has no room for this. I'm not picking on you, Chris. I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff I don't understand about God and the way the world works. But I do know that this young woman, who I have no reason to believe was lying to me, and the other friends that were part of her discipleship training school, said that two of her siblings did not get up the next day. I came home to a church. Literally the first day in the office, less than 12 hours after I arrived home, I had to settle a squabble between one local ministry and a short-term team as to who could sell bagels and who could sell donuts to raise money for their ministry trip coming up on our plaza that next Sunday. It had gotten kind of hot and heated while I was away, and apparently someone thought I was the guy to settle this thing. You know, it's a little hard for me to tell the story of the young woman to a group who's worried about if they're going to raise enough money selling bagels, because now they're selling Krispy Kreme donuts over there and they're going to cut into our bagel sales. It's really hard for me to care. And yet this is important to them because what those two teams are doing is really important. It's significant ministry these two teams are involved in. So how do I earn the right to be heard? Do I stand on a chair and say, don't you know that this sister, Tulith, who I just met, potentially dies next time she goes back to the village? I don't know, for her faith. Is that really going to be helpful? Is that going to put anything in perspective? Well, yeah, some kind of perspective, but it's probably not going to be helpful. So instead, you mediate. You talk about the issues that are on their heart, because those are good, godly men and women, about good, godly ministry. And so you meet them where they are. And somewhere over the course of time, you have a conversation, and you have a chance to talk about other things. And eventually, we, with both groups, had a chance to kind of reflect on some things because somebody eventually asked. Oh yeah, I forgot, Scott, you've been gone for the last 2 weeks with the team in Cambodia. Why don't you tell us a little something about that? So eventually I have a chance to tell them a little something about that. You're going to want to open the fire hose on your friends. Friends, that usually doesn't work very well for mobilization. Just like me, I used the word earlier, seduction. I was seduced into God's global purposes. I grew up in a very strong evangelical church. I was well trained. And we have a strong missions program. And yet, it wasn't really very big on my radar screen. Little bit here and there. Relationship here and there. Just as many of us probably were loved into the kingdom by someone in our family or in our cadre of friends who is a follower of Jesus. I want to encourage you to think about loving people and falling in love with God's global purposes. Because preaching ain't probably going to work. On the other hand, once I get inside a group like this, I have no problem given you the straight facts and the needs. You know, when only 1/2 cent goes to the Muslim world of all the money spent on outreach, that's wrong. And those of us in this room now know that, and we need to do something about that. Now, I don't have any problem getting in your face about that, but I'm not going to stand in front of my church and say that. I'm going to challenge them to love the Muslim world. And then some other point, I hope down the line, we're going to have a conversation. Let me give you one other quick little tidbit, and keep thinking of questions, please. We're almost out of time already. Sheesh. I love baseball. There's a dirty little secret in baseball. There are approximately 28 major league teams, 25. Is that number? Anybody know? 20? Is it 28 now? 30. Thank you. I didn't think that quite sounded right. There's 25 players on each team. Do the math real quickly. You can see how many players are in the major leagues pulling down a major league contract. The dirty little secret of baseball, if you aren't aware, there are minor league teams all over this country. There's approximately maybe as many as something like 18,000 players playing minor league baseball all across the country. It's getting paid at some level for it. The dirty little secret is there's only a few jobs in the major leagues. And on every minor league team of 25 players, there's probably only 3 or 4 players who have any chance. The other guys are just there to play with those 3 or 4. And usually when one of those guys eventually figures it out, as a bunch of my friends had, but it took them 3 or 4 years, that they were just there to play catch with the other guys who were good, really good, or potentially really good, they then tend to quit and go back to school or get a real job or put their degree to work or go to grad school. I want to suggest to you that for those of you who want to see mobilization, you want to see things change and take place, that if you think about the 100, you're making a mistake. You need to think about the 3 or 4 who are the good players. that are there on the team and have the potential to make the big leagues, and say, how can we get together and pray for a movement on our campus? You're going to be talking about that tomorrow night, or in a couple nights from now, I guess. How can we see a movement for God's glory on our campus? How can we see a movement, a reinvigoration in our church? How can we come alongside some of those gray-haired ladies in our church who take care of all the missionaries in our church? How can they mentor us? Because they have changed. Those little gray-haired ladies and the folks that they've been partnered with have changed history, friends. Gladys Aylward, the building we're meeting in here, or the Aylward Lounge over here, I was reading a book by one of our church's missionaries this week where he casually mentioned that he and his wife were sitting on a porch with Gladys Aylward having a conversation in northern India 60 years ago. Those folks changed history. We need to be close to those folks. Learn from them. But look for a small cadre. Sociological principles and research has shown that, get this, and hear it carefully, 2% of any group completely sold out for the vision of the group. 2% completely sold out, 100% for the vision of the group, can change the direction of the organization or the company. That has to be no turning back, die on the hill, sold out. As a mobilization guy, I hang on to the 2%. Because there's a lot of really rotten days in my job to try and encourage people to look under the harvest that's ripe and send more resources there, people, cash, whatever. But I hang on to the 2% rule. And I've seen it work in 2 or 3 things that God has given me the privilege to be involved in. So I know it works. So I don't care about the 100, I care about the 5. I don't care about the 100, I care about the 20. Find the few. And for those of you, any of you here who are going back to the same campus or the same town, you need to be really intentional before you get back, drop back into the world and life gets busy in a hurry. Wow, what would God birth within us a vision for our campus or our town? And how could we hold each other accountable and walk this thing out together to make that happen? Question? It's really 8 o'clock, huh, when I'm done?
You got
to
like 15.
Okay, that's cool. Is that okay with the rest of you guys? Yeah.
I got one.
Good.
The way, just what I'm thinking, whenever you're talking about this, it almost sounds like we're learning how to witness.
It
sounds a lot like faith.
Are we learning how to witness people is the comment. I'm just going to repeat your...
One of the keys is kind of, and this is preached, I don't know what you agree with in evangelism, but it's to get lost. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
people that we're talking to, they have no idea that they're missing anything.
Right.
How do we communicate that?
Great question.
They're going to hell. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. But the equivalent within the missions mobilization world, that's great. How do you tell someone they're lost who doesn't know they're lost? That's great. 30,000 today, before we go to bed tonight, 30,000 children will have died from malnutrition or from dirty water. Does anybody not care about that in this room? And I would give you props out the wazoo if you actually had the courage to hold your hand up. I would respect that tremendously. I'd be disappointed, but I'd respect it tremendously. Who wouldn't care about that? I now just opened a door for conversation. I don't quote the statistics. I just read it today, but I didn't trap it. I want to say 2 years ago, something like $11 billion by Americans was spent on makeup or hair care products. Or please do not quote that statistic. I just read it, but it was so obscenely high. It was like $2 billion on ice cream products. In a world where the whole world got together, at least a few generations, for Live 8, it should not be hard to begin the conversation today. That's how I'm beginning a conversation with my church when we roll around for our World Focus Weekend this year. And my church is multi-generational, lots of different ages, but right now my plan is to start with a clip from Live 8 and say, wow, this is the secular world. Look what they get. They get this. They get it here, and they get it here. How much more so is incumbent upon us to get that? Because you know that little kid in the southern Saharan desert, he can't make a noise loud enough to be heard that he's thirsty or that malaria took his third sister now. But Bono can. And this Chinese boy amongst the Zaba people of China with no known Christian witness can't make a noise that he doesn't know that there's the way, the truth, and the life to be found. But I know. I think there's ways to have the conversation. Don't start with mission. I try not even to use that word very much. I like to talk about being missional. I get in trouble with my missions pastors friends, and I serve on a national board for missions pastors because I don't think missions is the end all. I think we put mission as some sort of pedestal, and we put stuff on top of that pedestal, and missionaries tend to be number one on the pedestal of churchianity. Obedience is what God calls for obedience is better than life. If your obedience is to go to the Zaba people, then you better get your rear end there. But if your obedience is to be a faithful, kingdom-valued, consumed person who's working downtown Los Angeles as a stockbroker, living a lifestyle where you're giving away 70% of your income because you can do that, then I don't want you among the Zaba people in China. Because if that's your obedience, that's where you need to be. So it's the eye-opener. What's the eye-opener going to be? Others? Questions?
Yeah, no. Just on our campus, like there are tons of people who talk about like, oh, I want to go into missions or I want to do this, and I guess it's not for me to question. I guess I'm trying to be honest with myself, but a lot of people, they say I want to go to missions while they're simultaneously building other life plans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So with so many people out there saying I want to do this, you know, I want to do this, but it's a lot harder to find those 2 or 3% than it would be perceived. Because even the people, I feel like a lot of people even say they want to do it, don't really want to do it. They feel like they just should say that they want to do it. So how do you find that smaller percentage?
The perspectives course that you just took, if you recall, either reading the intro or it was described to you at the beginning of the class, began because 1 year Ralph Winter sat at the back of the gym at Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and said, huh, another 12 or 15,000 people just stood up and said, I'll go anywhere for Jesus. This goes on every 3 or 4 years. Why don't they go? That's the observation you just made. People say it and they don't mean it. How do you find them? Well, two things. I'm going to come back to perspectives. One of the best things you can do is figure out how to plug into a perspectives class that's going on in your region, or if not, start one. Figure out how to start one. And because that's one of the primary places that I fish. We do a perspectives class, which has 75 people or so every year in it.
from the beginning, Cindy Older. She and I work together. We are troublemaking teammates. Well, I'm the troublemaking teammate. She's the responsible one. But we're partners in crime. But from the very beginning, friends, she and I are looking for 10 or 12 people out of the 75. We aren't looking for 75 people. And that 10 or 12 that we begin to follow up seriously in the same way that you guys heard a presentation by the traveling team and something skewered you. Enough so that you signed up for a one-on-one meeting with Crazy Claude or somebody or Rebecca or somebody else on the team, depending on which team you had come through. And one thing led to another, and somebody challenged you and said, so why don't you come out to Pasadena this summer? And here you're sitting. Do not underestimate this. I think this is what you should be doing this summer. That'll help you find the three or four. Now, a bunch of people run away. But that'll help you with the three or four. I mean, you know what? The best part about being around college folks in every generation is no one hasn't told you yet you can't change the world. Well, I mean, they tell you, but you don't believe it. Don't lose that. And most of you will. Because most of my friends have. I'm 45. Most of my friends have. They made their plans to go and to do other things. And frankly, friends, the future mission is a lot about doing other things. Don't think anything you've done in preparation is a waste. English lit major. Is it a waste? Over the last week, I've been drafting some of the most complicated personal correspondence to all of our missionaries I've ever had to write. Or probably our church has had to write. Not wasted. All that time writing papers. Submitting scripts never to be sold. Not a waste. God does not waste your chemical engineering background. How can you be loosed? I got friends right now who just recently graduated from Caltech. They have a full ride at Princeton awaiting them to get their PhDs. Just got married this summer. They decided to take a gap year. They're going to a YWAM DTS overseas to say, God, continue us on this journey to the nations so when we come back to Princeton, we get our PhDs, that we won't lose sight of the fact that our target is to go practice physics and research science somewhere off the grid where the name of Jesus is not honored. So don't challenge them necessarily to give it up. That's what you're going to do with it. But isn't that always the story? It's stewardship. One more.
I think a big question we've asked some of our speakers, a lot of us have churches at home that don't have even a mission path.
Sure. Which is most churches in America.
Right. And so how... I understand, like, picking out a few people, like, that we see as those leaders, or potential leaders. But what about our pastors?
Yeah. The question is, what happens when you go home to a church whose pastor doesn't seem to have a mission vision? And I just came from a conference where missions pastors were, as a subset, gathered together. And that's always a conversation that missions pastors have. How do I envision my pastor? And these are, quote-unquote, the professionals. You know, we read all the literature. We're supposed to know what we're doing. and I keep coming back to the fact that, well, I know what's on God's heart. Why don't I just pray it? And I think a lot of us, I will tend to trust in my own skills and abilities and cleverness instead of God's ability to change heart. Hudson Taylor said, the secret is he learned to move men through prayer. I say those words all the time to myself, to remind myself, I have to pray for my leadership, my congregational leadership, my pastoral leadership. You know, and especially, friends, for your pastors, they are such busy folks. And their primary call is to shepherd you, the local church. Okay, that's what the guy who's in the pulpit, or the gal who's in the pulpit, maybe, depending on your church, that's their primary role, is to shepherd your faith community. But boy, I get really excited when someone knocks on my door and says, Scott, you know, I've taught English as a second language in a bunch of places. Do you need help training any of your teams? I go, you know, it gets really embarrassing. I fall around their legs and I hold them tight. It's not very professional. One of the best things you can do, especially after your summer experience, is ask your pastor or your campus leader to make a coffee appointment with them and buy the coffee. Do not cheap out. And if they want the fancy coffee, buy them the fancy coffee, okay? And just say, you know what? I want to share with you some stuff that happened this summer. And I want to ask, I don't know what the next step is, but would you help me figure out the next step, open some doors, introduce me to some of our congregation to help mentor me in next steps? Because one of the things we're all looking for in church are folks who, you know, want to serve. That is kingdom lifestyle. And good pastors, good leaders are not doing, they're releasing and loosing others in their gifts to do. So one of the best things you can do is approach them and say, you know what, here I am, send me. Besides, your pastor wants to know and your campus leader wants to know what went on this summer. They don't, you know, they aren't going to ask you the elephant question. They might ask the elephant question too. Did you see an elephant or see a lion? Did you ride an elephant? But, you know, they're on the hook. Their job says they have to care about the serious stuff. So you don't have to give them the 1 minute answer. You can have a 5 minute worked up for them. I want to give you a couple of recommendations for mobilization stuff in particular. Because that's, as I say, that's really what I am when it gets right down to it. First of all, you may be a mobilizer if. I wish I had 10 clever quips, but I don't yet. But here's a really good one. If you're already a networker kind of person, if you're the kind of person that people come to you and say, do you know someone who? Do you know where I can find? And, it happens to all of us, but if it happens to you all the time, that's kind of raising your MQ, your mobilization quotient. My definition of a mobilization person is somebody who just can't close their hands. Whatever they got, they're willing to give away. Okay, if you love giving stuff away, that you learn this need over here and you immediately get on the phone and say, hey, I just heard about such and such a thing and I know you and you're hardwired this way, you might be interested. And you cut and paste something you read on the web and just send it off to them. You are a classic mobilizer in vitro. So nurture that. And if you've got folks around you that are good at mobilization stuff, then I want to encourage you to get connected with them. Talking about, how do I talk about this stuff? There's a great book out there. They actually just came out with a new book, but it's called Run with the Vision. It's probably 15 years old now. It is a great practical book on just talking about this kind of stuff and the experience you've had. Every chapter has a story, so you get a story. And the best thing we can all do is tell story. People don't care too much about the principles. They want the story and then unpack the principles if they want those. But I love Run with the Vision. It's my basic pop mobilization book that I always recommend and I often give away. And sorry, I was totally out of them. Otherwise, I would have come up with some lame contest and given one away tonight. One of the things you're going to be talking about is, again, student-led prayer movements. I would encourage you to look into how can we get involved with the Student Volunteer 2 movement. I can't recommend that enough. Prayer changes things. So look up svm2.net. Urbana. I kind of slammed on it in some ways, or at least I mentioned it. I didn't slam it, but I mentioned it. Urbana/St. Louis, because that's where it's going to be, is 18 months away now. Are you thinking about that? You should be. And you should be thinking about it on behalf of your college group. Yes, it's an intervarsity, but Scott, it's an intervarsity thing, and I'm a crusade, or I'm a nav. Well, tell you what, why don't you come anyway and join all the other crusaders and navigators who come to this. You'll find plenty of brothers and sisters. But within your campus group, man, strategize now. Ultimate road trip. I remember when I was growing up here, I never went to an Urbana when I was actually in college here in Pasadena, but I remember when it would roll around, we'd have like 50 or 100 people pack into cars and drive all the way back to Illinois here from the West Coast. Ultimate road trip. A lot of good time to unpack a lot of things and build a lot of relationship. So to me now, that's we fly, but we lose the mobilization potential by flying. Okay, I need to wrap up. Life is unfair. I want to wrap up. Well, you might not think that way. I want to wrap up by sharing with you some words from one of my dead mentors. We all need mentors. It's really important that some of our mentors be alive. It's equally important that some of them be dead. Dead people know stuff, and if they wrote it down, even better. How many of you have "My Utmost for His Highest" or was given to you at some point, and you put it on a shelf somewhere because it was written weird and all that kind of stuff? That was my story for a long time. And there is Oswald Chambers' "My Utmost for His Highest," a devotional track, in case you don't know. And there is some that's actually written in modern English, but I actually like the old stuff. I want to read you one. This is from June 19th, and it's titled "The Service of Passionate Devotion." The word devotion, if you did a word study, I haven't been to seminary, so I'm not allowed technically to do this, so don't trust me. But if you did a word study on devotion, truth in advertising, you would find out that the root word is devour. That's a lot different than eating. Devour. That's a root word of devotion, or where we get our word devotion from. And Oswald Chambers always takes a verse out of context, or his wife and family who edited his words. This time it's John 21:16, where the question is, "Do you love me?" Jesus replies, "Then feed my sheep." His commentary: Jesus did not say, "Make converts to your way of thinking, but look after my sheep. See that they get nourished in the knowledge of mission." Oh, no, wait. "See that they get nourished in the knowledge of me." We count as service what we do in the way of Christian work. Jesus Christ calls service what we are to him, not what we do for him. Discipleship is based on devotion to Jesus, not on adherence to something you believe or some sort of creed. "If any man comes to me and doesn't hate," fill in the blank, you know the verse, father, sister, mother, world, etc., "he can't be my disciple." There is no argument and no compulsion, but simply, "If you would be my disciple, you must be devoted to me." A man touched by the Spirit of God suddenly says, "Now I see who Jesus is, and now that is the source of his devotion." Today we have substituted creeds and beliefs, or belief in creeds, excuse me, for personal belief. That's why so many are devoted to causes and so few devoted to Jesus. People do not want to be devoted to Jesus, but only to the cause that he started. Jesus is a source of deep offense to the educated mind of today that does not want him in any other way than as a friend and comrade. Our Lord's first obedience was to the will of his Father, not to the needs of men. The saving of men was the natural outcome of his obedience to the Father. If I am devoted to the cause of humanity alone, I will soon become exhausted. And we all know it in this room because we've all tried it. I will soon become exhausted and come to the place where my love will falter. But if I love Jesus Christ personally and passionately, I can serve humanity, though men treat me as a doormat. The secret of a disciple's life is devotion to Christ. And the characteristics of the life is its unobtrusiveness. It's like a corn of wheat which falls into the ground and dies. But presently it will spring up and it will alter the landscape. If you want to be a landscape alterer, I'm going to ask you to stand. I want to pray for you. And with that, I'll wrap. Father, God, we do not stand here before you because we are worthy. We don't stand here before you because we're stiff from sitting in the chair. Lord, we stand before you because you are high and lifted up, and you are worthy of our response. Lord Jesus, would you keep us close to you. That we would fall in love with you, not with the mission. That we would stay in love with you. For the mission will have some very bad days. And if we love the mission, we will not be found faithful. We must love what you have called us to, but it begins with you. Lord, help us to devour you, not that which you have called us to. Father, I pray courage on these friends. I pray grace on these friends. I pray wisdom on these friends. And Lord, I pray that it would begin and find its root in their relationship with you. Lord, would you help them to be more than they do? Would you have the give them courage to say no when their schedule screams no? And give them the courage to say yes when their schedule and your prompting says just say yes. Father, for a country unknown like Abram, I pray that you would take them, whether it be a literal different place on this map or whether it be to a new place in the ministry that they have in their dorm and on their campus and in their home church and in their own families. Father, I pray that you would use these folks to change the generation that they walk with. I pray that you would use these folks to mobilize their campuses. Lord, give them a deep appetite to learn more about how it is that you would move others' hearts. That we all here could say, like Hudson Taylor, I have learned the secret of how to move men's heart through prayer. Lord, grant them courage, grant them faithfulness, grant them grace. And Lord, for the unexpected, Father, help us to hold on to the one who holds our future securely and not fall in love with the future, but the one who holds it. So, Father, we just pray for this class of IT, this IT experience, Lord, that you would grow from this place world changers, campus changers, community changers. Lord, for your sake, not that we would get any glory from it at all, but that you would get all that you are worthy of and deserving, and we would pray it for the sake and on behalf of particularly those who still tonight have no ability to hear and know that you are the way, the truth, and the life. And I pray it in your name. And all God's people said,
to find out more, visit www.thetravelingteam.org.